This program is not being used to make diagnosis, administer treatment, prescribe medication, or order tests. The information contained in this program is provided as an educational service. This program is not a replacement for the relationship you have with your healthcare provider. If you have concerns about your health, please contact your healthcare provider.
Welcome to The Checkup on WCLK with Dr. Courtney M. Shelton, MD. Dr. Shelton is a board-certified internist and primary care physician. Today's program features common sense health information you can use for happier, healthier outcomes in your life. Here's Dr. Shelton.
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Today on The Checkup, we are talking about how to survive breast cancer with Anissa Palmer, founder and executive director of I Will Survive, an organization providing economic support, prevention, education, and health and wellness services to those at a higher risk and those affected by breast cancer. Good morning, Anissa.
Good morning. Good morning.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure, absolutely. I grew up in a tiny island called St. Croix, Virgin Islands. And at that moment, when I was 5 years old, I lost my mother to breast cancer. She was diagnosed with stage 4 invasive breast cancer, and doctors gave her 6 months to live. It had metastasized to her lungs and was final lung collapse. Unfortunately, she did pass away.
Wow. That's a lot. And you said you were 5 years old at that time?
I was 5 years old.
Wow. And so from that, I'm going to assume that's what sparked this whole image of getting involved in breast cancer.
Absolutely. The seed was definitely planted. Ended up moving to the mainland, United States, and did a little bit of work at Georgia State University, undergrad, and then served a little in the military. And it was my second tour in actually Iraq, where I saw a mirage of my dear mother. And from that seed that was planted at five, it had finally grew. And I knew my purpose in that moment. Just got out of the military, started an organization called I Will Survive, Inc. It's been doing the work ever since.
Wow. And how long has that been now?
It'll be 8 years in December.
That's amazing. What's always amazing, too, with breast cancer, when you look at all the overall cancers and you look at lung cancer causing the most deaths, you know, mm-hmm. it just seems like there's not a lot we can do.
Right.
However, with breast cancer, mm-hmm. Being the second leading cause of cancer, especially in women, we have a lot of work to do.
Yes.
We have a lot of work to do. So when I think of a woman, especially coming into the office, you know, I could spend 30 minutes just talking about breast cancer, you know, but we get involved with our patients. What does every woman need to think about when she is thinking about breast cancer, when she walks out of that office?
I think the most important thing, because it's overwhelming, the mental health piece is a critical role, I think, in the line of work and what we see with the patients that we deal with. Having that confidence to know that they will survive, whether it's from their doctor, any support system, and oftentimes, unfortunately, the population we work with, they have no support system at all. Mm-hmm. As an organization, we become that support system. And so trying to have that confidence is the biggest key.
Because often without the support and confidence, there's not a lot.
Right.
There's not a lot.
Right.
When you see these patients, what types of things do you look for when they come into your office?
The best way we can serve them. You know, it's not just, okay, making sure you're going to see your, you know, annual clinical exams, making sure you're getting your screenings as often as you need to, depending on your age. But also to know that, you know, what else is there? You know, okay, well, my husband left me as soon as I was battling breast cancer. What other resources are out there? You know, so that we can sit down and really look at all the resources in which we can help. Whether it's knowing that you can shop at the farmer's market and get double your bucks if you have a SNAP card, you know, or if knowing that, you know, I can get free workout, you know, fitness activities at Piedmont Hospital on the 7th floor, you know, through their amazing program. You know, all these great resources that are out there. But a lot of the individuals that walk through our office, they do not know of any of them. And I know our social workers are overworked in the hospitals, but we're all trying to work, I think, more collaboratively together in order to make a difference in these individuals' lives.
How important are friends and family, especially in the diagnosis and in treatment of these patients?
So important. We often tell, even if it's families that come in or a friend or a colleague, stop looking at the internet.
I know.
Stop looking at the internet. They're going to be more scared. They're going to be more in fear. And that only causes more stress and tumor growth, depending on what stage and tumor they have. But we try to make sure they stay away from the internet.
That is very, and that's with all of medicine. Stay away from the internet. It does grow quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
When we have patients that come into the office, and let's say they're there for their screening exam, you know, we love that we have patients that come before the age of 40 and get their exam. But I often see a woman in their 20s or early 30s that have disease, and it's always picked up late. It's always advanced. We're bent by this way that we do screening. However, you see these patients. What do you do in those situations?
It is really, really difficult because I started my first mammogram at the age of 28. My mother died at 38, so my doctor recommended for me to start 10 years early. And so, thank God, still nothing, no positive signs of anything. And I actually went and got the BRCA gene test done as well to ensure what risks entailed in that, and encouraging my sisters and other family members and through the community as well. But I think for us, we have the demographic age 21 to age 80 in which we serve. And so young, you know, seeing it like you mentioned before, I think the younger ages it can't happen to me. It's only for old people. And we get it all the time. Even, you know, with our men, that's just a women's disease.
That's right.
You know, and so we're trying to dispel all the myths that are out there and just making sure we're on top of ourselves so that we can go see our PCP or primary care provider right away to get into the right care that we need.
Now, when we look at patients that may access you, how soon do they access your company?
Great question. You know, we have some that are accessing us as soon as they're diagnosed. We have some that are on the preventative side where, you know, I need to get a screening done. Where can I go? I don't have insurance. Or we have some that have been diagnosed for a year and did nothing and coming to us for help. You know, what do I do now at this point? But then in the middle stages of, okay, I'm at stage 2, 3, 4, you know, I need additional services, whether it's with help with housing. You know, I may have been getting evicted out of my home. I lost my job. You know, I have no income in the household. And so various stages we've been reached out
involved.
To.
Because it's interesting. We have a lot of patients that come. And what's interesting about talking to you is that we're talking about the needs of these people that are outside of the medical therapy. And that's what's so important, especially as a physician. Mm-hmm. I see the medical aspect. But I don't know, sometimes when that patient walks outside that door, I don't know what's happening.
Right.
And with this type of disease, it's very important. It's very important. When we think of the financial costs associated with breast cancer, where else do those come? I know we're dealing with treatment.
Right.
And then what else is involved?
My. So much. We actually have a financial literacy course and healthy finances workshop that we do at the facility in order to ensure, you know, whatever stage you are, yes, okay, you will incur this medical debt, you know, but to focus on the essential living costs now, you know, can you pay your bills? And so there are resources out there for individuals who do have, you know, incidences like that, and we give all those resources. Our organization alone, you know, will help pay rent, utilities, travel costs to and from the healthcare facility. And those costs are, you know, outrageous for a lot of the clients in which we serve, even to the cost of paying for parking at the hospital. Wow. We hear that so much. And it's like, I just scrapped up my pennies in my car to pay parking, you know, at this hospital. But I know that I need my treatments because this organization is telling me don't miss my appointments.
Right,
you know,
right.
We've put clients through Uber, Lyft. I've drove them personally myself. To make sure that they do not miss those appointments. Very, very critical.
Wow, that's amazing, because it's so important to have that extra support. When I have patients that come for a physical examination, and often they'll come for Doc, I need a woman's exam. I need a physical exam.
Yes.
What types of things in your patients that do not have disease, what types of things are you telling them? What do you want them to know?
Absolutely. If they are disease free, you know, stay on top of it. You know, making sure you're getting at least 30 minutes of activity a day, getting the proper nutrition, so fruit and vegetables, drinking lots of water. You know, it's those pieces I think is we often forget, especially the clients we serve, single mothers, pre-diagnosis stage still, you know, when we're out active in the community. Yes, okay, I'm a mom. I'm working maybe 2-3 jobs. I'm trying to make ends meet to keep my family together. But what about yourself? We focus a lot on self-care.
That's right.
You know, so that way there is no future of any disease.
What's interesting is that you mentioned fruit, vegetables, healthy activity. A lot of times people don't realize that there's an increased risk in all types of related cancer.
Right.
And as it relates to especially breast cancer.
Yes.
And it's very important to have that established doctor-patient relationship. Very important.
Mm-hmm.
We think about once a patient has been diagnosed with cancer, they've gone through the treatment, imaging, and then what happens next? What is the new normal? Let's say I'm an example of a patient who's been through breast cancer for 5 years, so I'm mm-hmm. a survivor. What's my new normal?
It varies so much. I think for the ones who do have that support system, it's trying to erase everything pink, and I don't want to see it anymore, and I don't want to relive any nightmares, and I just want to live a normal life,
right?
Quote unquote, whatever normal is for that person. And then seeing, okay, I'm a survivor. I'm going to help support others now. You know, I want to be in this every day, and I want to be more than pink, and I want to be more than October, and I want to be an advocate in my community. And we have so much, so many survivors that are doing that. And that's so, so great. And so we try to support no matter where you are and what level, you know, whatever is good for you, because self-care, even as a survivor, you know, and that survivorship piece.
That's right.
So that, you know, that you are okay.
What about with, especially with the NFL, so much is going on with breast cancer. Has that increased our ability to diagnose, treat? Has there been anything that's come from that? It's been going on now maybe 5 years, maybe, if I'm just guessing. What do you think has come from that?
Pros and cons. We have some individuals in our programs that hate to see this hate to see the pretty pinkness going on. It's not a pretty disease, and so we have some who refuse to, you know, watch football and be active in anything that paints a pretty quote unquote picture of this disease. I think the others that do love it, it's the awareness piece. You know, it's.
Okay.
But I think for the others, want to move beyond the awareness piece. Okay, we know now, in a sense. It's what do we do after the knowing, after the awareness, after the knowledge? Where are the funds going when everyone wears pink? You know, I think some people question that as well. So it varies.
Especially when our women come to the office and they're looking for things that could be suggestive of breast cancer. We always think of the pot of orange, the orange shape of the breast or the rash.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other things that we should look for even as a provider and as a primary care physician?
I think so. It's we actually, when we're out in the community, we take a sample, how to feel for a tumor, if you will. And there's various tumors and cysts and inside this breast template. But it's, when we're serving in the disadvantaged community, there's often minority. And so a lot of the pieces we have are Caucasian pieces. And it's, I think, completely not interactive at all when it's okay. Something that does not look like us,
right.
Sometimes. So going back to the health literacy piece as well, I think a lot of times it's completely tuned out. Not just for what we use to show and do the awareness piece, but then also with our primary care providers. You know, we've had a lot of incidences where we had a client that was dealing with cancer and sickle cell disease and was being treated down at Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Okay, well, her hematologist and her oncologist can't really see eye to eye. There is no good hematologist there that could help her with her sickle cell disease. So we got her moved into Grady. And so having one of the best sickle cell centers there was so she can get the proper care she needed. But then, too, there wasn't anyone that looked like her. And so for that piece, too, she said, well, they don't really care about me because they're not taking the extra effort or time to give me the care that I need.
A lot of times, too, we have women look for discharges of the nipples a lot. Mm-hmm. That seems to be very common. In addition to having, let's say, as you mentioned, you mm-hmm. have family history. How has the BRCA gene 1 and 2, how has that helped us, especially now since the code has changed? Let's say now we're doing more genetic coding
yes.
in medicine.
Yes.
So how is that helping us in diagnosing the treatment of this disease?
I've seen it in different angles. And so we have a new partner to Helix Health that does genetic testing with us to allow our clients to have the option. And so in our intake application process, we ask, you know, do you know if you carry the BRCA gene, BRCA 1 or 2, and then have that conversation, you know, knowing what it is and knowing that it can come from mother or father. It doesn't mean that you will get breast cancer if you have this gene, but I think it instills somewhat of a empowerment piece for the clients that we have in our programs, and they say, okay, yes, I'd like to know, you know, and that I can make the choice on what I'd like to do. And extreme preventative could be, you know, removing my breast if I'd like to. And they have that choice to do and do the reconstructive and not ever have to worry about ever getting breast cancer. And then some of the extremes we've seen of I'm moving my ovaries too. I already had my babies. I'm done. I don't want them. That way I never can have any issues of breast cancer or ovarian cancer ever in my lifetime.
Again.
You know, so we've seen that piece. Which is a personal choice. But then I've also seen the, I don't want to know. You know, I've had a sister that was diagnosed or a mom, and which we try to not keep people in that alley, because not knowing, then they're not going to get the screenings as well. So we try to instill the power of the ask and the power of the knowledge so that you can be your own health advocate and more empowered.
Because it's really changing a lot, you know, especially within the last 4 or 5 years, insurance companies are doing more and more.
Yes.
And they're allowing us to look for these genes,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially ovarian cancer related to BRCA1 and BRCA2, which is
yes.
very important.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the risk factors? A woman comes into the clinic for an examination.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the risk factors?
Yes. So we've seen obesity. A huge risk factor piece there. Definitely age and being a woman is the highest risk factors there. But I think other pieces as well. BRCA gene, smaller risk factor for some we've seen in our program, about 12% for those who do have the BRCA gene. But then others, I think still there's so much of the unknown. Even looking at some of the data that's out there and research that's been done by the European Union and Canada and then what we've done here. And then also environmental risks. You know, there's not a lot of research here in this country that puts into the risk factor there.
Because, yeah, we think of hormonal risks.
Mm-hmm.
You think of risk associated with occupational hazards.
Yes.
In addition to women as well. I just thought mm-hmm. about that. Women that are exposed to estrogen for a long time
yes.
and don't have babies.
Right.
That would be something, you know.
Right, right. Those who do not breastfeed, you know, so we try to encourage, you know, especially new young moms, you know, make sure you are breastfeeding to reduce your risk of getting breast cancer, which often people don't know.
I know I wanted to talk a little bit about the different types of therapy that are used. You know, when we talk about diagnosing somebody with breast cancer.
Yes.
And we talk about treatment, therapy, lumpectomy,
mm-hmm.
different things like that. And I think people need to know a little bit more about that and what goes into that, especially, let's say, the anti-hormone therapy
mm-hmm.
For women, let's say, who aren't having treatment. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, sure. We've had, I think, some for our HER2-positive, triple-negative diagnosis of breast cancer for some of the clients in our program, trying to understand what their treatment options are, you know, and they're very different from other breast cancer diagnoses. So it's, we've seen for even individuals who are survivors and they're on the tamoxifen long term and seeing some of the changes in health, depending on different treatments, I think that different clients do go through affect, of course, everyone differently. And so we've seen for some treatments where there's been different heart issues, post-treatments, we even was able to be blessed and get a grant for the Delta Dental Foundation to help with tooth decay post-chemo treatments. But then, you know, something we didn't even think about, you know, when we started the organization. But then also, too, it's for some of the clients in our program, okay, yes, I'm happy with my lumpectomy and, you know, I'm doing great and I'm okay, you know, stage one. Or we've had a client, you know, who feel stage four, I'm going to get a double mastectomy, you know, and I'm going to do the tram flap surgery, you know. And so we've seen some incidences where I didn't like my surgery options. You know, I didn't like when the tissue was removed to redevelop my breast, or a piece of skin from my back was taken off to expand in a sense, or even explosions of implants for redeveloping the skin to reconstruct the breast. So we've seen a lot of different incidences where some folks are really happy and they're doing really great and confident in their own skin. But then some who are dealing with a lot of depression, some who are dealing with a lot of various instances where we've done referrals to different counseling services that are out there, which has been really great to see the increase in knowing that you don't have to do, you know, every single thing that is prescribed to get that second opinion, to instill the power back to the patient, you know, to, okay, yes, this is what my recommendations are for you. But of course, having that option to seek other treatment options, which sometimes you can't for everyone, depending on what they're diagnosed with.
How do you, if you had to think of your typical patient, what does that feel like, that patient?
Yes, so typical patient, single mom, 2 to 3 dependents, working a deadbeat job, you know, paycheck to paycheck, month to month kind of lifestyle. And it's, and then everything falls apart. That's our typical patient, you know, whether it's, you know, I got laid off and, you know, who's going to help me with the kids, or my car broke down? How am I going to get to my appointments? And because there is no money there, you know, how do I survive?
What's the best way to access you?
Yes, absolutely. So on our website, we have the client intake process. And so they can reach us at www.iwillsurviveinc.org. We have clients reaching out to us everywhere, Googling us, Facebook, Instagram, sending us messages that way. You know, I need services. How do I? And so we'll send them the link, or they'll be allowed to walk in as well. We'll take walk-ins. And our office is open to the public Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And we're located at 5879 New Peachtree Road, Suite D is in Delta, and that's Dorville, Georgia, 30340.
Okay, well, Miss Anissa, thank you for being here today. A lot of great information. I started out thinking about breast cancer, but realized there's so many other things that help, and absolutely, these patients need it. So thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. It's an honor to be here.
You've been listening to The Checkup with Dr. Courtney Shelton. You can listen to this program on demand at WCLK.com. Dr. Shelton can be reached at the Shelton Hospitalist Group, located at 315 Boulevard in Northeast Atlanta, or by phone at 678-705-2355. Or you can like Shelton Hospitalist Group, LLC, on Facebook. The Checkup is produced by Dr. Courtney Shelton, Janice Shelton, and Rob Maynor for WCLK. Thanks for listening.